Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Thursday, the day after National Letter of Intent Day. Signing day, as we all call it. I guess it's now the late signing day since there's two now in the NCAA, but USC finished extremely strong, going up from number 12 in the 247 Sports National Team Rankings all the way up to number 4. A great close for Clay Helton and company, and we're going to break it all down today, the day after signing day. I have a very special guest, USC Assistant Athletic Director for Recruiting and Player Personnel, Eric Ziskin. He's all over this recruiting stuff, so he's going to kind enough to join us in a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk about USC's crazy close on signing day. There's so much to get into, so we're really looking forward to talking with Eric. I think you're going to enjoy this episode. I think inside signing day, trying to get the behind-the-scenes stuff is always cool, and the problem is the coaches are not allowed to talk about signing day. So that's a big reason why, you know, we do everything we do in reporting on recruiting. Coaches can't talk about these players or what's going on until they actually sign on the dotted line. Now they're signed. Now the day all the coaches can talk about it. So we want to get some behind-the-scenes look at how USC put together this class, and we thought Eric Ziskin would be a great way to do that, picking his brain a little bit. Before we jump into that, I wanted to thank everybody for listening and thank Lisa Mattress for being one of our sponsors. I want to encourage you to go to lisa.com/USC and check out their products. So this was the coolest thing that I've got as far as, you know, when we talk about products on the podcast. I mean, the day I opened the door and looked at this big box, that, you know, it wasn't a huge box. I mean, not something you would think a mattress was in. It's like it's the size of a box of golf clubs or something. So it was really cool. So they are, if you don't know, it's an innovative direct-to-consumer online mattress brand that's also very socially conscious. So they're driven by their mission to provide a better place to sleep for everybody. And they're going to donate one mattress to a shelter for every 10 they sell through their 110 program. So over 22,000 mattresses have been donated so far. They also plant a tree for every mattress sold, and they donate 1% of their employees' time to volunteer for local causes. I love that because I love volunteering myself, so I try to do that every week. So you can get them online. They also have a Dream Gallery in Soho, New York, at Virginia Beach. The way you do it, you order it online. It's American-made. It'll ship right to your door. You can try it for 100 nights risk-free and free shipping, as always. So if you have a West Elm store near you, you can actually go check one out or buy one there too. But the coolest thing, I think, is getting that thing come to your door. It's like a freeze-dried mattress that's all compressed, and you open it up and fold it in half. And it takes about 24 hours to kind of like reinflate and get the full on so it's a full mattress again. So it was a really cool experience. And the best part is for all of our listeners, you're going to get $100 off your Lisa mattress. So if you go to lisa.com/USC, it's promo code USC, or just lisa.com/USC, you will get $100 off your Lisa mattress. So definitely check it out. And if you do, drop me an email and let me know. We're actually my wife is selling our old mattress now, because we're moving over to the Lisa one. So it's been a really cool experience with Lisa. And just like, you know, you can order stuff online. You never think you're getting a mattress online. So, but it's really neat. So they do it well. All right. So as promised, we have our special guest, Eric Ziskin. He is USC's Assistant Athletic Director for Recruiting and Player Personnel. That's a whole lot to put on a business card. If people still put, do you still have a business card, Eric? Well, anyway, Eric, thanks for joining us. What's going on, man?
And thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Do you have business cards or people? It's all electronic now.
Yeah, I have business cards, but they basically more just sit on the desk. And especially dealing with the kids, they're not taking a business card all too often.
I've tried that before. Like, even like Keely, like, you know, she just graduated. She was our intern. She worked, you know, she's a reporter for us now. I'm like, oh, I printed out business cards for you. She's looking at me like, what the heck would you use these for? I'm like, okay, I'm a dinosaur. People don't do this stuff anymore.
You want to just put your number right into my phone?
Yeah, exactly. You can do that quick. Follow Eric on Twitter, at Eric, E-R-I-C, then Z, underscore U-S-C. And he's a good follow on Twitter, especially on signing day, because he's got these cryptic tweet messages that you might want to, which we'll probably talk to in a minute. But I wanted to kind of get your role, just to describe for people, what's your role in the athletic department, the football team? Like, what are you, you're an assistant athletic director, but what is your main duties there?
I guess this could also be my title on the business card. If you just put the recruiting guy, that would pretty much sum it up. Anything and everything that has to do with any of the happenings within football recruiting, it all goes through me. So everything from the film cut-ups that the coaches are sitting down to watch, to suggesting to the coaches which one to focus on, to helping the coaches when they go out on the road, deciding which schools they need to go to, which coaches they need to sit down with and check on some guys coming up in the future years, to, Alex Rios is in charge of everything on campus once they get here. But obviously during that process, I'm here and assisting with that as well. And then we got, everybody knows Gavin Morris and my direct assistant director of player personnel is Alex Collins, as well as, if I'm the recruiting guy, there's our graphics guy. Also, his name is Ryan Miller, who we all work together to make the whole thing happen.
There's a lot of talk about these support staffs, and you guys are all part of that. You mentioned the team. It's not a very big team. I think you guys do, obviously, a great job. This is a team that's closed on signing day year after year. Pretty much, it seems like every coach is able to do it really well, but Clay Helton's been, has excelled at that. When you see that out there, that like Georgia might have like 60 people kind of doing what your team of three or four are doing, is that kind of like motivating? Is it discouraging? Or you must hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we hear about it and we see some stuff out there about it. But just the way that I've worked and always worked is to worry about what we're doing here and doing everything we can here as best as we can. Maybe we are shorthanded, to be honest. I don't really even know. Of course, the more help we could get, we would love to take it, but we've felt like we've used resources we have and we maximize everything we possibly can out of them, and that's all we can worry about.
Yeah, I think it's the fan base out there, certainly fans can be very critical. They're always very supportive, it seems, of you guys and wanting to be able to get you guys more resources. But it is about being efficient in those resources, and you guys do that in spades. And I wanted to congratulate you guys because it really was an amazing class. You're talking about being outside of the top 10 on the 24/7 sports rankings as far as teams, and then getting all the way into the top five, finishing at number four, and finishing with the flurry. National Signing Day, a bunch of guys end up committing, and just congratulations on that. And then maybe you want to talk about your tweets. I said at the top of the show in the intro, recruiting, your coaches aren't allowed to say anything to the fans until everybody signs. So there's kind of these cryptic ways, and you're kind of the liaison to let everyone know, hey, a fax just came in.
Yeah, so thank you on the congratulations for the class. We're obviously excited about the class as a whole and each of the 18 new guys we brought in on scholarship. So we're ready to see what they've got once they get here. And you always get a little bit of a different result when they get here on campus. Sometimes you're 100% spot on how a guy plays, and hopefully a few guys even positively surprised once they get here. But on the tweets, like you said, we get the paperwork, and sometimes USC takes a little bit longer, or we have to wait until a kid has his little announcement ceremony or whatever it is. But as soon as we get the paperwork, I like to let the fans know that the ball is actually rolling and there is some stuff coming in. So, and especially with this class, I knew that we were going to bring more guys in than on paper looked like we had space for. So I thought this year would be a curious watch to see how high the number got when people thought we probably couldn't get that many in.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I mean, that was actually the next point I wanted to talk to you about. As the faxes came in, you would tweet out the extra. So if you don't know, he would tweet out a fight on emoji, like the you know, the two fingers in the air. And then people would count like, oh, there's 16. And we do a scholarship distribution chart where that's, you know, what we feel. These are the players that are on scholarship and the breakdown of the class and everything. And when it was all said and done, I have 90 people on that chart right now. And obviously you're only allowed to have 85. Now, we asked Clay Helton about that yesterday, and he said, you know, we have room, but he wasn't going to make any announcements as far as that kind of stuff goes. So did you guys kind of know? I mean, there's always attrition, but when it's this close, did you kind of have a number in mind? Like, okay, we feel these are the players that are not going to be here for whatever reason, so we'll have this many spots under that 85. Because, you know, for the last 7 years or whatever, it's always been about the initial counters. This year, I think for the first time, you know, really since like the sanctions, those didn't matter. It was really about the 85 head count. And I'm curious about your plan for that going in.
Yeah, the short answer to the whole question there is of course. We had a plan. Coach and I sat down and we had a plan and sketched out and looked at all the different possibilities of who could be leaving for all the million different reasons that it could be. If this happened, this is where we would end up. If that happened, this is where we would end up. So we knew there was a number that we were a little bit more comfortable with. And then there was a number that would be the absolute. This would be very much to the edge. But we knew where we were trying to get. We looked at the board of who's remaining at each position and the needs we had. And we looked at, you know, how comfortable we felt with our current players for their future here next year, and then the board and how comfortable we were with them actually choosing USC. And it all comes together yesterday.
And then how much is that is fluid? Because, you know, guys will switch their mind at the end. Maybe you get a call from someone that's interested and you're like, oh, maybe we want to take this guy instead. Is there some fluidity there, or does it get kind of rigid towards the end where you're like, nope, this is our plan, this is what we're doing?
Well, nobody can mess up a good plan like a football coach. So all things in recruiting are fluid at all times. Obviously there's a plan. There's the idea of exactly what's going to happen and where it's going to go. But then, when you're dealing with 17, 18-year-old people who are being pulled in 97 different directions, things change in a hurry. Things change really, really fast. So there is a plan. This is ideally what's going to happen, what we think is going to happen. But the reality of it is there's always changes that nobody saw coming.
Well, you bring in six linebackers in this class, and that was certainly a position of need, and you look at all the guys, and they all look like studs. But it's really a third of your recruiting class are linebackers. I don't know. It didn't seem like that was probably the plan going in, but then just kind of opportunities arise. You're like, well, we could move him here or whatever. Is that kind of one of those things where it was fluid, where maybe when you wrote it down, you're like, six linebackers for the class of 2018. It just seems like hard that would be the number you guys would have come up with.
Yeah, I think you said it exactly right. If we sat down on signing day of last year's class, and the number that we put down for linebackers would not have been six, and it wasn't six. But, and we do those, of course, we do our projections and targets, but it's not a hard and fast rule that we have to sign this many. And Coach alluded to this yesterday about if we didn't get to a certain number at a certain position, it's not worth it to just take a player we don't believe in just to fill up that number on the depth chart because it looks better on paper. You have to bring in a kid at every single kid that you as a staff believe in. And if it happened to be six linebackers this year that we thought, well, two things there, and I'll get to my second point next. But if it happened to be six linebackers that we believed in, the best football players are always going to play. They're always going to find a spot on the field to contribute no matter what, even if there's depth at their position. If they're great football players, they'll find a way. And my second point on it is if they're listed as six linebackers on the internet, and our class ended up as the fourth ranked class in the country. But significantly more important to us as a program is the way that we view these guys, both at positions and our own rankings within our program, because we don't always agree with the way at both positions and the stars and the rankings. We don't always agree with how the recruits are presented on the internet. I mean, the five stars and the top ranked class and all these things is awesome, and of course we enjoy achieving those things, but we're always more concerned about what we thought about this was the best linebacker or whatever it might be in the country, and then once they get here, they're actually making plays on the field and helping us contribute to national championships.
Yeah, you're good at these segues, because that's what I was going to ask you about next. If that's something you look at, and you know, you obviously have to trust your own evaluations, and that's what you guys are, it's your jobs, you know, and you got to bring them in, evaluate them, and know guys that are going to fit your system. But it is a way when, you know, Clay Helton goes up in front of an audience or speaks to on the radio or whatever and can say, hey, it was the number, you know, someone, you know, like we do it at 24/7 Sports, a lot of people do it, keep track of where you think these kids are ranked, and you can say, well, they have the number four ranked thing in the country. It's a way to kind of, something that the fans look at, you can kind of portray to them. But ultimately, right, it's like, it's about what you evaluate. If you think there's a two-star guy who's really a five-star, you don't care that he's not ranked very high according to the recruiting rankings.
No, of course not. Obviously, it's usually a good indication if enough writers and enough people had an opinion of a kid that he's a five-star player. Usually, that means he's pretty dang good. He's done something in the past couple years that said he's pretty good at football. But, of course, and we've seen it over many years, not every five-star turns into an All-American. And, you know, we've had guys in our program that were, were lower-ranked guys that have contributed a lot. Of Chenna Nwosu and Deontay Burnett immediately jumped to mind. And even in last year's signing class, I think Brandon Peely was one of our lower-ranked guys, and he played over two five-star defensive linemen at the same position as him.
Another great segue, because you mentioned Deontay Burnett. He was a signing day switch blue shirt that I was actually at Sarah High School that day. When he announced for USC, I was kind of like, what? And I had seen him before when we were watching other kids at Sarah. And I asked Gerard Martinez, our recruiting analyst, I'm like, who's that? He's like, oh, Deontay Burnett is going to Washington State. I'm like, dude, that guy's really good. And so obviously you guys saw the same thing and were able to switch him. The impact of early signing periods, I wanted to see how that impacted you yesterday, because a guy like Deontay Burnett probably would have signed in the early signing period and he wouldn't have been available. And obviously he had 1,100 yards last year. He was a huge part of this team. So I wanted to see how much this early signing period impacted you guys, especially a program that's able to kind of switch guys at the last minute where maybe Oregon State or an Arizona couldn't do in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think he is pretty much the perfect example of how us at USC were most affected by the early signing period, because all of those guys that we've watched throughout the season that we've liked, we've said, man, this guy's going to be a good player in our conference, but right now it just doesn't make sense to take him also, because there's other players at other positions or even at his same position that we feel like his skill set fits our needs more. As the board stands right now, those guys would still be left at the end of the process, and we could call them on signing day and say, hey, this is where we stand right now. Do you want to be a Trojan or not? And if they want to stick with where they were planning to go, great, that's best for them. Or if they want to come on the team, that we were offering them a scholarship because we believe in them and think that they could help us. But a lot of those options this year were gone. There wasn't very much left to do to move on to other guys that we really thought were capable of contributing. And again, it goes back to, is it worth taking a reach that not everybody on staff believed in and could contribute just to fill up a spot. I always think it's not. I think every kid that we bring needs to be an exceptional talent. And that exceptional talent is also part of, I think, why we closed the way we did, in that a lot of programs all across the country didn't add or change all that much yesterday, where we had, you know, we brought in 8 more guys who the caliber of the player that we bring in here at USC, for whatever reason, they're always, seems like they're always going to wait until signing day. They're always going to wait and wait and wait to make their announcement and their choice. And we made our big push to get those kind of guys here yesterday.
You mentioned the staff agreeing, and I think that's one of the kind of mysteries, how that communication works, because you guys can be all over the country. You had mentioned like Gavin Morris without the, you know, a 10th assistant without the running back coach, he was able to go on the road and recruit, and you'll see tweets from him and T. Martin and a bunch of the guys. But, you know, someone might offer somebody, and is there like a daily meeting where you're like, hey, this is who we offer today, or this is what we like, or how does that communication work? Because you're talking about, you know, a dozen or, you know, 15, 16 guys or whatever it is, you got all the guys involved in this recruiting process. Everyone has different opinions. Everyone's seen different things. And I imagine keeping all of that organized is got to be a bit of a challenge.
Well, that's where I come in. And that's my daily challenge and daily thing that I deal with. So I guess closer to signing day here in the December and January contact period, when all the coaches are out on the road, my minutes on my phone plan pretty much goes up by 100 times. And there's almost not a single phone call where I'm on the phone and it's not ringing from somebody else just checking in to make a, oh, this is the conversation I had with this coach or this kid's uncle or this kid's cousin. And I ran into this 2019 guy out at practice and he looked like a stud. We got to make sure we put him down on the lists. And here's the next guy this coach told me about and all those things. But December and January, I got a phone attached to my ear for 2 straight months, just making sure everybody knows what everybody else is finding out, where everybody else is going. But it's a million balls in the air to juggle, but that's the fun of it.
Can it get heated sometimes? You're like, no, I like this guy, or maybe the number, you know, you want to bring an extra linebacker versus an extra receiver or anything like that. Are there really, you know, strong discussions, and is it like Clay Helton who makes the final call, like, hey, this is the direction we're going to go?
Absolutely, it can get heated sometimes, and I'm usually right in the middle of it, because there's always, obviously, the position coach and the coordinator have their opinion on a player, and I don't always agree. And that's a big part of my role, is to present guys that I believe in and I've found that that might be going other places, or even that are planning to come to USC. And I spend hours on hours watching film, both from camps, from off-season events, and then, of course, during the season. You know, I'm watching absolutely everything, every snap, offense, defense, special teams, even when the guy's on the sidelines, I'm trying to watch what he's doing to see if he's into it, cheering on his teammates, coaching up the guys, or if he's just sitting on the bench with his head down, just to get more of a feel and more information on how the guy's going to actually play and contribute when he's here. And putting all of that information that's possible to collect together to present to the coaches to make sure we're making the best decisions. And I don't always agree. And I let that be known, because it's why Coach Helton brought me here, and his expectations of me. And the final decision, like you said, is always going to go to Coach Helton. There's times where he's like, he listens to me and the position coach and the coordinator and the entire staff. And he says, okay, but this is what we're going to do. Yeah. And once he makes that call, that's what we're going to do. But he does listen to everybody's decision or everybody's evaluations. And a lot of times, of course, everybody aligns, but sometimes me and a position coach will butt heads a little bit. And that's part of it, and always will be, but I'm not here to make friends with the position coaches, although I do have great relationships with all of them. When it comes down to the business side of it, I'm not here to make friends with them. We're here to bring in the best players that are going to help us win.
Oh, all business. I love it. The NFL aspect can creep into here, obviously, with some players leaving early. That opens up some spots, or a guy like, so you have Deontay Burnett leaving early. Maybe that wasn't as expected, or a Cameron Smith staying, how that impacts, you know, you still bring, Cameron Smith stays, you still end up bringing six linebackers. I think you get involved in some of that NFL stuff too. How does that kind of play into all of this in the recruiting world?
The biggest way that it impacts me and the recruiting department and recruiting decisions is the spots that are remaining and the skill sets that are leaving, the holes that it's leaving in the team that we have to fill. And I think it, less so than the fans see, Cameron Smith leaving this year doesn't have so much of an effect on this signing class and who we need to immediately bring. So I'm going to say two things here that kind of contradict each other, but we bring kids here who we think can play, who we expect to play, who we expect to compete and not to come and sit on the bench. But we also don't really genuinely expect them to come in as true freshmen and start and be all Americans. We obviously love those guys who come and do that. You're a Dory Jacksons and Robert Woods, those types of guys who come in and they're freshmen all Americans. But if a player is playing and legitimately contributing as a true freshman in the real world of football personnel and projections, that's a very, very good indication that the player is going to be really good.
Yeah. Those are guys you would like to have in the program,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. We like to find as many of those as possible. But especially as the bodies get bigger on your offensive and defensive line, it's harder and harder to really expect a true freshman to come and contribute. And we actually had a few on both sides of the ball this year that were able to do it. But it's almost not fair of us to expect and to put that load on their shoulders as a true freshman, to really expect them to come in and do it right away. Obviously, we love when they do, and some guys are capable of doing it, but that's not the, you know, my projections and my decisions are based on 2-3 years in advance. I don't look at, well, Cameron Smith left this year, so now we need to add another interior linebacker to replace him right away. You know, I'm looking at in the next 2 years, who might be leaving early. Is Stephen Carr going to last 4 years, or is he going to probably head to the NFL in 3 years?
Gotcha.
Because that's why he came to USC in the first place. So I'm looking at if at the roster going forward to plug and play the signing classes more years in advance than, well, Biggie decided to stay, so that's going to affect what we're doing this year.
The official visits are always interesting. USC loves you guys love doing them in January when, you know, maybe someone from the Midwest comes in and it's cold there and it's warm, you know, when it's warm in L.A. Was there a crazy, you know, what was like maybe the craziest story from an official visit this weekend that you could share? Was there anything that was kind of just like, wow, I can't believe like this stuff happened on the official visit weekend?
The first thing that jumps out to mind, I think, is just how few we ended up doing this year. We only had 26 official visitors, and we brought in 18 kids.
Wow!
Which is a heck of a batting average, which we're proud of, course. But last year we did 34, and obviously we brought in a few more kids last year, or we ended up signing a few more kids last year. But that was another thing of just the early signing period. We only did 10 official visits the whole month of January, and I've been here when we've had 10 official visits and 10 official visitors in one weekend. So it was a weird layout of how everything went. But let me think of a specific example from one weekend that was interesting.
Yeah, it's if you only have 10, there's not that many crazy things kind of going on, I guess. Only 26. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys have. I bet you're probably the fewest in the country. I bet you of the top 50 ranked programs, I would guess that you guys brought the fewest in.
Yeah, we don't really have a number on what everybody else has done, but I would think we're certainly towards the bottom of that. And part of it has to do with our us focus on doing it in January so that the coaches get to spend a lot more time with the prospects and their families. Because the funnel of the available and interested prospects obviously continuously kind of trims down and gets down to the guys that are really, really considering USC instead of just taking a trip to come see a new place or get a feel for it. By the time we get to January and the guys that we're really giving official visits to, we know who's seriously interested. They know where they're seriously interested in. So we're left with the guys that are actually going to be considering USC.
Well, now the rules are changing, and Clay Helton mentioned that yesterday, with there's going to be spring official visits. I'd rather see the signing period moved up to like a July timeframe or something instead of December when it's so busy already. But maybe kind of get your thoughts on that, if you would like that to change, and how your job's going to change now that there's another official visit period where they can come in the spring.
Well, it's definitely going to change, but I don't know yet. I don't have an answer for how it's going to change yet. We're just going to have to go through it once or twice and see, but I don't know exactly what the differences will be. Obviously, everything is more sped up, and you have to know the directions you're going and gather a lot of your information and evaluations on kids a little bit earlier in the process. Because usually, obviously, that spring evaluation period when you're going out two times in the spring to watch these guys at practice is a big part of figuring out how strongly you believe in a kid that you've offered and those types of things. But now that's the same time as you're going to give a kid an official visit. And then you got to hold on for dear life all the way until, even if it's the early signing period, it's quite some time before they're signing between their official visit, if they're taking it in the spring, and signing.
Yeah, there's
so it's going to be a big difference, but we'll adjust to it and make it work. But it'll be interesting how it changes.
We've just been talking about the process. We haven't really got to talk about individual players. I feel bad. This was kind of our allotted time. Do you want to spend a few minutes, or do you got to go? If you have to go, no problem. I understand, but.
Well, no, I could talk about this stuff all day. No worries. Just fire away.
Okay. I just feel bad. Like, the process and stuff is really interesting. And since you're involved in that so much, I mean, you're running that basically a lot of the time. So, working with Johnny Nance and everybody. So, all that stuff is really interesting. But there's players, and there's some really good ones. Maybe we don't have to go in depth on everything, but the JT Daniels is the, that was the biggest thing. I talked to him in San Antonio about reclassifying when he was at the Army All-American Bowl. And he had said people were suggesting it. And I heard him last night on the, I think it was the Fox Sports West show with Greg Biggins. And he had said, Greg had texted him, hey, I hear you're reclassifying. And he said he got the idea from basically a reporter suggesting that he heard that that was going to happen. But that's got to be one of the craziest things, where you have a quarterback from 2019 reclassifying and coming in, especially when you only have two scholarship quarterbacks right now, and it was really important to get one in this class.
Yeah, when he came to us with the idea, we were obviously thrilled, and we were towing a careful line of, obviously, we're stealing him basically away from his high school, where his high school, of course, loves him and was expecting to have him next season. At the school that we're going to keep going back to with the talent that they have there. But when he came to us, we basically said, if that's what you and your family want to do, then we'll start getting the ball rolling. Because obviously there's a lot of things that have to line up and make sure that it all happens, to do all the academic work and the paperwork eligibility wise that he needs to shrink into 3 years of high school instead of four. So, obviously, we were thrilled, and we think the world of him, and we'll take him as soon as we can get him.
Want to talk about the cornerbacks a little bit. That was a big signing day. Coup, Elijah Griffin, and Isaac Taylor Stewart, just really talented guys. What did you see? And obviously, it seems like you guys were pretty happy. I know Isaac Taylor Stewart said he didn't call you guys until afterwards, and I asked Clay Helton about it, and he said, you feel pretty good, but he really didn't know until you know, he saw him put that hat on. But what do you think about those two guys?
Special talents, playmakers with unbelievably high ceilings that are going to help us, probably actually both of them, on multiple sides of the ball, just with their ability to contribute offensively, special teams, and defensively. And that's actually one of the things we look for in a high school corner. You actually want almost less of their film to be on defense, because people understand that this is just a waste of time for me to try to attack this kid, because he's just, my receiver's not open over there. I'm not even going to look. So in at the high school level, your corners actually a lot of times do almost less on film on defense, the way that they contribute most to the game, you know, with things that are fun to watch, with highlight plays, is as returners on special teams and some spot duty on offense.
The receiver position, I mean, I don't know if anybody recruits more five-star guys at receiver than you at USC. And sometimes some of the fans are like, oh, man, another great receiver. They almost get tired of it because there's so many good ones. But you look at Amon-Ra St. Brown and, you know, Devin Williams, I think, is a really intriguing player who can, you know, I've seen him play really, really well in some of these camps and stuff. And, you know, other times not be as good. But I've never seen Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, not just bring it. He's got a lot. He's got a lot of moxie. What do you think about the receiver position and bringing those two guys in?
Isn't that like a meme or a hashtag first world problems?
Yeah.
Well, too many five-star wide receivers is like hashtag USC problems. If people are getting bored and tired with more five-star best in the world type of wide receivers here. So I apologize to the fan base that we're bringing in more five-star receivers, but hopefully you guys can handle it.
They can't handle
both of these. Both of these kids were absolutely fired up. Like you said, Amon-Ra is just an absolute competitor. And I think that's what makes him so great, is that he so badly wants to be great. You know, he's of course a special athlete, but his mentality, his professionalism, and his desire to continue to improve is what has gotten him to where he is now, and is going to take him to special places as well. Devin is a raw prospect. He's new to football. He's new to some of the techniques of it, but just his size, his fluidity, his ability to transition into routes at his size specifically is what's so exciting about him. I mean, his ceiling is literally as high as his 80-inch wingspan can reach. I mean, which is a lot higher than a lot of other people. So he's got work to do. Of course, he's a lot further along than a lot of other people in the country, but once he puts in that work, his what he can get to is incredibly high.
Yeah, I saw him at the opening, and he would have some games where he'd be like, you know, two touchdowns and a pick and a defense. You're just like, dude, this guy's like all over the place. But, you know, we've seen him other times where he just wasn't doing that much. So he's a really intriguing prospect. Talanoa Hufanga from Corvallis, Oregon. I got to meet him in Hawaii at the Polynesian Bowl and chat with him. And I'm a pretty smart guy, and I was like, man, this dude's sharp. He and he's a communications guy, and I, you know, and he talked about, you know, wanting to do, like, basically, you know, reporting and stuff sometime in his life. And so I had him interview a guy. You guys didn't end up getting Penny Sewell, but I didn't even prompt him for questions, and he was doing a really good job. Like, he was a seasoned pro. Interviewing him, I thought he's instantly one of my favorite guys in this class. I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said there. He's just a professional. It's almost weird how mature and professional he already is. And even the way he approached the recruiting process is the same way. I've never seen it before in my life, but he printed out a grid of us and the other schools he was considering with all, it was about 25 different characteristics of what he was looking for in his school. And he literally put a check mark in each of the columns for the schools that this school has this, it doesn't have that, it does have this, it does. And by the end of it, he sat down, he said, okay, well, USC has a check mark in every single one of these. So what am I doing? I'm going to USC. And it's just, that mentality is, of course, it's something important for that Coach Helton is paying attention to, and we pay attention to in the evaluation process, because we've found, you know, you're everybody is a great athlete at this level, but what makes the difference between Juju and Adoree type of guys is their brain. Once they get here, their mental approach to life and to the game of football, that's what makes a good player a special one.
The Marquis Stepp is an interesting guy. I got to talk to him in Hawaii as well. He's someone that had a long-standing relationship with Dylan McCullough, who obviously moved on to the NFL, but he had already signed. Was there any kind of concern there where, you know, he signed with someone that was close to him, or, you know, with his position coach and not being there? And what do you kind of think of him as a player?
There was definitely some concern there, but it went away quickly once we talked to Marquise, and he and Dylan talked to Marquise and let him know what he was planning to do. But Marquise and his family was good with it. They understand the opportunity, and they weren't mad about it or anything. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's still coming to USC, and we don't think it's such a bad thing that he has to come to USC. You know, we're out here. We think USC is a pretty great place, and so does he, which is why he signed in the first place. Obviously, he had that relationship with Dylan, and that's who he's expecting to come play for, but our next coach will be another great one, and Marquise is still excited to be here. As a player, really excited about him. He's a different kind of style back that we even have on the roster at all, at 230 pounds, just a thumper, but also one with speed who can help us in some of those short yardage and goal line situations just to move the chains. So we'll get him healthy, continue getting him stronger, and excited to see what he does on the field once he gets here.
There's some big guys. Justin Dedich, you know, sometimes you recruit centers and you're not really sure. Like, everyone I've talked to about Dedich and from what I've seen, just seems like he's an absolute terror there. What did you kind of think of Dedich and what he brings to the table?
Dedich is another one we're excited about. I mean, he does everything that you on paper you put a checkbox down for an offensive lineman to have. I mean, he's just a jerk on the field. I mean, he is mean. He does not mind hitting you right in the face. I remember watching a game. He was having some problems with his helmet staying on, and he didn't block anybody any differently. One, his helmet pops off on plays, and he just keeps going, driving guys 12 yards back off the line of scrimmage, and then finishes right over them. No helmet on, just puts his face right on guys without even face mask on. And I was like, yes, that is the type of guy that we need up front. He doesn't even care. He just wants to hit you.
Nice. Where, like, on the other side, like Liam Douglas seems like more of a project where you kind of bring him in and, you know, hopefully a couple years down the road, he's contributing.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to what I was talking about before of there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with a kid not playing immediately and taking a few years to A, learn football, or B, put some weight on. I mean, he's 6'5", 285 pounds now, where that's significantly heavier than he was certainly last year and 2 years ago. But that's okay. You know, we look at him, you see a 6'5", going to be 300 pounds one day, man, who's scoring touchdowns. He's playing running back. Last year, he returned a few kicks. That doesn't make sense at that size.
No.
So, and those are some of the things we're looking for in the athletes we bring here is what's unique about him. Well, he does unique things to be so big, so athletic, and be able to run and have ball skills and body control that he does. Is he going to take some time to learn the football and the techniques that Coach Callaway will bring him? Yes, but there's nothing wrong with making a coach actually coach, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's – yeah, you want to – I mean, getting in talent is one thing. Developing is another job, so – but you got to evaluate and bring in the guys that will fit.
Right. The one thing you can't really change about an athlete is his athleticism. I mean, as much as they work out and train, of course, they're going to get faster and quicker and stronger by a little bit. But the raw ceiling of athleticism is pretty much thanks to mom and dad. And if you don't have that, you really can't get it any higher. personally, I lost at birth. I could train for 24 hours a day, and I would never be able to do the things that our players do. But these guys can, and that's what we're looking for, those big bodies who can run, jump, and do all the things that Liam does. So we're excited about him as well.
We'll do a couple more and let you go. I don't want to keep you at such a busy day yesterday. For the defensive linemen, bringing in Caleb Tremblay, who's going to be a junior, and then Trevor Trout, kind of a big space eater. What do you think about those two guys?
Really excited for him. Caleb is just a violent, active motor guy. I mean, he is going to chase and chase and chase. He'll work 192% on every single snap and get to the quarterback. So he's really fun to watch on film, just always giving full effort. And Trevor is just a absolutely massive human being, really strong, can change directions, but just is so large and impossible to move. So when you put him up front on your defense, it keeps two of those offensive linemen busy, and then your linebacker is free to trigger and get through the gap and make a play in the backfield. So he'll help the whole defense function.
There's six linebackers, like we mentioned. If anything kind of stands out to you with any one of them, we don't want to make you go through all these guys, but there's a lot of them and they're all like really good. Is there someone, like a couple of special features or players or whatever that you really enjoyed, would like to talk about?
Well, I think as a whole, the holes that we filled, two different kinds of holes, but the linebacker class helps us replace some of the guys that have left with Chenna and Rasheen, some talented edge guys. One that I'm as highly regarded as the class is, I might be most excited about Malik McLean versus his rankings, and he's ranked high, but I think the kid is really, really special. I mean, his family has roots down in Atlanta, and he plays like those guys that you find down in the South. He is just unbelievably twitchy off the line. He's really, really long. So we're excited about the whole class as a whole, but maybe him specifically, I would call out as a guy that I think is going to surprise people with his ability.
Yeah, he's one. It's funny. His name comes up quite a bit. So, all the guys are ranked high, but for him, it might be, there's some upside here where maybe not as, not the five-star like a Solomon Tuialapupu or a Palier Niotiote. Hopefully I say that right. But those two guys they're pretty special too, I would say.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, like I said, the whole class is really exciting, but those guys just with their football instincts and the violence and the way that they're able to use their hands. I mean, they're beyond their years as high school players. So just the way on film that you can see, I mean, it seems like EA knows the play call before the play is run. And he tackles the running back before they have the ball all the time. And how does he know what gap to trigger through? Well, he does somehow. He watches film, he studies it, and he just has the instincts and the violence to make all the plays out on the field. So we can't wait to see what those guys do.
All right. Eric Ziskin. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric, ERICZ_USC. Certainly a good follow on Twitter. I'm sure your Twitter followers went up with all your cryptic tweets and everything. And then also, he's the recruiting guy. He's USC's assistant athletic director for recruiting and player personnel, and was our guest here today on the Peristyle podcast. Eric, we really appreciate taking some time. Thanks to USC coaching staff for clearing you to come on the show and sharing some insights. I thought it was really intriguing, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, and certainly getting your thoughts on these players. I think the fans are really fired up for this recruiting class. And again, congratulations, and thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Eric. And everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of the Peristyle podcast. Very special guest, Eric Ziskin. We appreciate him coming on, and we appreciate you listening. Thanks again, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.